Well, hello again, everyone in Turdland. This is your humble correspondent, Turd, with another edition of the TFMR podcast. Today, well, gosh, I hope you're ready. I was able to track down a guy that many of you have gotten familiar with and I think have become a fan of in the last few months. And his name is Andy Hoffman. Andy, his official title is Director of Marketing at the Bullion and, I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm not describing it right, Bullion and Coin Service and Storage Service, Miles Franklin. But many of you maybe don't know who Andy Hoffman is, but you know who Ranting Andy is. So I thought, I got to get a hold of this guy, and I'm going to turn him loose and let him rant. So without further ado, hello, Ranting Andy, how are you?
Great, and thanks for allowing me into Turdland.
Oh, hey, the pleasure is all ours here on this end, Andy. So that I don't butcher things, can you tell us a little bit, first and foremost, tell us what Miles Franklin is and the benefits of your company?
Right. Well, Miles Franklin is one of the largest bullion dealers in America. Been around for 22 years, based in Minneapolis, but, you know, we're a virtual company. And basically, we can help you with any decision to either buy or store bullion that you'd like.
So you can store bullion as well?
So yes, we have programs in both the states, in Fargo, North Dakota, and we are now working with Brinks, a security company in Montreal, Canada.
So you, and it's allocated? It's actually mine, you mean, as opposed
yeah.
to MF Global type situation?
Yeah. Yes, you can go on a website. There's a thing that says offshore storage. I actually wrote an article that's there because I just visited the facility about a couple of weeks ago. And we purposely did it to avoid the banking system per se, and it is allocated. It's a Miles Franklin specific program, and I think for people who are scared of nationalization risk in the States, Canada probably provides the lowest political risk of any country I could think of around here.
Daddy, you're right. I mean, that's bringing it all. I mean, allocated gold held outside the U.S. That's a lot of folks looking for that. I'd say that's probably a growth business, and it can. You start out by going to milesfranklin.com, right?
Right.
And you, Andy, as director of marketing, if you can, kind of summarize how you got to that role. Where did you start in this industry, if you will, and how did you get to where you are?
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a long road, but I can probably say it pretty quickly. I am from New York. I don't live there anymore. But as a New Yorker, I had dreams of Wall Street, and I got a degree on Wall Street in finance, a degree in college in finance. I got my CFA. I spent 15 years on Wall Street working for all the firms that you know. I was a ranked sell-side analyst at Salomon Smith Barney for 6 years. I was a buy-side analyst. I was a broker at Cantor Fitzgerald. I did all kinds of things in the industry up until 2005 when I left for good, never to return. I was very disillusioned by all the fraud I saw within Salomon and within the industry itself. And pretty much if I look at the list of all the companies I've worked for, every one of them has been either nationalized or bankrupted or scandalized. And I became in 2002, as soon as I learned about precious metals, I became 100% invested, which is where I've been to this day. I became an expert in the topic, and when I left Wall Street, I went into the business working in investor relations for mining companies, first as an officer and then as a consultant to perhaps two dozen or more. So I know the ins and outs of the business. I started writing a blog maybe 3 or 4 years ago just to help people educate themselves and protect themselves. And about a year or two ago, Bill Murphy of Gatto, who's a close friend of mine, named me Ranting Andy because I'm very passionate and irritable about the gold cartel. And so it was very natural that a few months ago that Miles Franklin contacted me and said, we enjoy your rants and we're looking to, you know, give a little more exposure to what we do and to help educate people. So here I am.
So here you are. I suspect, having heard that your experience is similar to mine or similar to pretty much all of us that kind of trumpet this manipulation, suppression, cartel scheme on a daily basis, you know, it's not that we all got together somewhere and said, you know, and we've all been buddies for 20 years. And we're like, okay, here's the next big thing. We're all going to go out and You know, talk about some make-believe scheme of gold price suppression. We've all, just through our tribulations and experience, have discovered this. How did it all dawn upon you as you were transitioning away from Wall Street that all of a sudden your eyes were open and went, wait a second, there's some stuff here that's not right?
Yeah, well, you know, I can almost pinpoint when it started, you know, when I was disillusioned. I mean, look, you had the tech wreck started in 2000, 2001. And, you know, after 9/11, when I saw the, pardon my ringer, when I saw the markets get supported, that was when I first realized there's something amiss. And then when I saw sitting in Solomon, where we're very sensitive to the topics of Enron and WorldCom, and I saw the Dow being held up those days, then I knew that there was something wrong. Now, once I got invested in precious metals in 2002, it took me a matter of days before I realized something was wrong. Within months, I was a member of GATA, and you know, within a couple of years, I was one of the major contributors of GATA. It's very natural. You know, once you understand the situation, it's very natural to understand why it's being done.
Yeah.
This is the greatest fiat experiment of all time. It's going to be the greatest failure of all time. And the people that have started it and controlled it are desperately trying to prolong it, and they will fail.
In the end, yeah. And their efforts to prolong it are just, like you said, becoming increasingly desperate, and no doubt about that. Isn't it funny, though? I mean, you only have to really watch or invest or trade futures, gold, silver in particular, for a week or two to notice that this is just like anything else. And didn't it kill you? You sit there, and it's generally accepted that central banks intervene in the foreign currency market, which is a huge market. And it's now known that they intervene in the treasury markets, right? Because they're all this QE.
Well, I mean, you know, these are things I write about all the time. The working group on capital markets is an official group whose reason to be is to support the stock market. Quantitative easing and Operation Twist are official programs to support bonds. The Exchange Stabilization Fund is an official group that's goal is to manipulate currencies and gold, for that matter. And you know, all the major investment central banks of the world have admissions. The Bank of International Settlements, the Bank of England, Greenspan himself have all admitted this. But again, people don't want to, you know, the see no evil, hear no evil is the mantra of most people. It's not going to help 99% of the people to know that there's something going on. Very few people can protect themselves even if they wanted to.
Yeah.
So it'll go on until it finally breaks, and it's getting to the breaking point right now.
Yeah, and then that's something. Of all that, all the other areas where governments and central banks intervene, but we're supposed to believe, oh, but no, that gold just freely trades, you know, and you're just some kind of tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist if you think that. I just think it's remarkable that still is a widely held view.
Well, I've learned a lot about human nature. I mean, I think the things that have made inspired my writings, and I think why people like to read them is because I write a lot about history and human nature.
Yeah.
You don't need to write so much about, I believe the government's doing this. This is what has always happened. This is how people are acting the way they've always acted.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians and bankers are acting the way they've always acted, and fiat currency systems are doing the same thing that they've always done. And, you know, most people don't want to hear this because it's not going to benefit them. Look, it's not going to benefit me. I mean, yes, I own gold. It'll go up in value. But it's not going to be a happier world when that happens. I'm just trying to protect myself. And, you know, there's only a handful of us that really want to grasp the truth. And sadly, it's a very small group.
Yeah. And like you said, it's not you're not really going to benefit anybody that stacks and saves. All we're trying to do is protect our current, not necessarily standard of living, but current wealth. I mean, if we make a bunch of fiat wealth owning metal, big deal. I mean, what good's that going to do you when the value of the fiat's declining nonstop? I mean, all I see us being able to do is someday, once all of this finally collapses, perhaps we can convert some of our physical back into whatever the new the modem of commerce is, you know, whatever the next currency is.
Yeah, it'll be a currency based on some kind of gold backing, like any currency that's ever succeeded throughout history. And of course, after what we're going through right now, of course there's going to be a gold-backed currency. When will it be? How will it be? I don't know. Could it be next year, 5 years? I mean, who knows? But the fact is, between getting from point A to point B, there's not a doubt in my mind that the value of the fiat dollars will fall. I mean, gold is not investment. It's money. It's and the problem is the fiat currencies. They will go down. Either they'll fall precipitously all at once, like a lot of us believe will happen, or they'll happen slowly as they've happened over the years. But either way, the pace is going to be a lot faster than it's been over the previous 10 years, or the previous 2 years, for that matter.
Yeah. Do you think, I guess this is the way I've looked at it. I mean, we mentioned earlier about the desperation and the efforts that are maybe being made to hold on to the powers that be, trying to hold on to the power that they have. And they're doubling down and tripling almost to exponentially down their efforts. Do you see, as I do, the direct correlation of that to what happened in silver in May, what happened to gold and silver together in September? It seems that the attempts to suppress are getting more brazen as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've written kind of about all the different segments that we've seen because, I mean, you know, after 10 years in this market, 100%, we've seen everything. But, you know, things changed a year ago. I called November 9th, 2010, I called D-Day. I mean, that was the day that silver just exploded, almost hit $30, and all the mining stocks for the first time in who knows how many years were surging on huge volume, particularly the silver stocks. And it was right after that day, there was a big smash that day, and then all of a sudden I saw the algorithms jump into the big cap stocks. And that was what made me leave mining stocks forever, once I saw those algorithms, which are there every single day now. And the amount of, I think the average big cap stock, 60% of its volume now is new short selling. I mean, so that was one thing. Then, you know, that still didn't work. And in April, as you said, you know, silver broke out. And they were forced to step up their game. They did the Sunday night paper silver massacre, as I call it, and they followed it up with a nice attack for a couple of weeks, and then sure enough, a couple of months later, gold is hitting a new all time high, and silver's back to $45, and they started what I called Operation PM Annihilation 1. Well, I called it just regular until there's now number 2. So number 1 literally started. I mean, think about how insane this is. Gold hit its all-time high essentially on Labor Day. It was trading around the world. It was actually actively trading in New York on Labor Day.
Yep.
Okay. At 1920. Then that morning, you had your first Death Star attack where it fell like $40 in 5 minutes. And a half an hour later, the Swiss National Bank devalues the franc, which is the most bullish thing in the world.
Yeah.
So clearly, they had advance notice and they made their attack. And still gold was back up to 1800 a few weeks, months later, and then they just did this new attack, which started right after the ECB cut interest rates.
Yeah.
And you see on the tape it says Bank of England, Federal Reserve, and Bank of International Settlements sell gold when it hits highs, and then they retract the statement, and sure enough, after defending 1750 for 2 weeks, all of a sudden gold falls $200 with, you know. So the point is, like you said, the acts have become more brazen, more obvious. No one has written more about these things and documented the individual activities that they do every single day than me. And there's more and more people watching, including the people with the big money in the world, like the Chinese government. So it can only go on forever, especially in the physical market where the Chinese and the big buyers know that there's no real supply down here.
Yeah. No, I was told that kind of off the record a couple of weeks ago by a guy that I know, that if you want to buy a couple of gold eagles or gold maples, sure, you can go on to Atmex or go to Miles Franklin and sell you a couple, you know, at 5% over spot. You got 50 mil, you know, if you're a billionaire and you want to take 10% of that, $100 million, and buy yourself some gold, you're still paying over $1,900 an ounce to get your hands on it and get it, you know, safely delivered someplace. Oh, God, you'd have thought the I was a heretic for saying that. The people that showed up on my side said, "You don't know what you're talking about." Really? Really?
Well, look, all you have to do is go on Atmex's, you know, now that Atmex used to, and I'm not belittling them as a competitor, but I'm saying, you know, they put on their site their prices. They used to have a lot of hidden costs in the prices, which angered a lot of people because they'd get to the checkout page and it would be much more. Now they have them detailed, so I always look to see what they do. And it's been for the longest amount of time now. If you want to buy under 20 Gold Eagles there, their price is spot plus 164. It's been that way forever, every time I look, no matter what. I mean, that's a huge, huge premium. And by the way, under 20 Eagles, let's say you're buying 19 Eagles, which will cost, you know, $35,000. That's not exactly a small purchase
right.
that you have to pay spot plus 164. Now, if you buy it, let's say you buy, you know, 20 to 100, the price is certainly better. But then when you get in the big numbers, as you say, are you kidding me? There's no sources. I was just putting an article yesterday, the chairman of AngloGold, which is the third biggest producer of gold in the world, was saying that they're now getting these big government bigwigs trying to buy from them instead of them selling to the refiners. I mean, there's no way you can go out right now as a Chinese sovereign fund and just be like, oh, I'm just going to buy, you know, $1 billion of gold. It just is not available at these prices.
And why wouldn't you go? I mean, you hear those stories. And people are poo-pooing, that's ridiculous. And so, well, if you're a government or a government fund or just a wealthy individual, why in the world wouldn't you go to a miner and just secure it yourself?
Well, the one problem with that people don't understand is that the miners have these offtake agreements with refiners. So they, in many cases, I don't know AngloGold's specific thing, they probably have a deal where everything that they sell, that they produce, they have to sell to, I'm not saying Johnson Matthey, but maybe it's Johnson Matthey, maybe it's the Perth Mint for all I know. So it's very difficult for them to extricate themselves. That said, you know, these mining executives are unbelievable why they refuse to renegotiate and say, well, if the physical price is $150 an ounce more than the paper price, why don't I renegotiate my deal with my refiner? Or at least when it expires, say we're doing something that's more reflective of the real market. And because, look, I'm the one who has the leverage. I'm the one with the gold, not you. But none of them will do it. And until they do, people have to realize that when you own mining shares, you are going to be tied to the paper price. And that's the big difference between owning bullion and owning mining shares.
Yeah. Well, and then, like you said, you're also fighting against the hedge fund managers that run that ratio trade that Dan Orsini talks about, where you can short the metal and then, or short the miner and then take the money and buy the metal. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can do to manipulate a miner down.
And you know, and you know, I love Dan Orsini, but I never agreed with that. I've written about that before. I think I just think that makes no sense at all. I don't believe there's actually people with big money out there shorting aggressively mining shares and buying gold. It's counterintuitive why someone would do that. Maybe there's someone that does it, but for big money to be doing that, I don't believe it all. I think the biggest shorter of mining shares is the government. There are definitely hedge funds there that piggyback, just like there are hedge fund guys out there that know, you know, these futures traders to sell gold futures just before 3 a.m. because where the COMEX open, because every day it falls then.
Right.
So, look, the major player, and I was just talking about this with D-Day, there's no doubt in my mind that these government HFT computers are out there attacking these big cap stocks because they know that there's absolutely no regulation of what they do. In fact, there's a sanction of what they do.
I'm sorry, I got distracted by my phone. I never had the house phone in my office.
No problem.
And my kids left it in here, now it's rung twice. It's just that kind of day. One last thing on that ratio thing. I think it's hard for me to see it being done across the board, but I can see where if you own a mining stock or if you recognize, you know, if there's a mining company that's fully hedged to the point where, you know, a $500 move in the price of gold doesn't help them because they sold everything forward at $1,000 an ounce, you know, then you know that gold going up isn't going to drive up the price of that stock. I mean, your bullion purchase that you buy with the proceeds is going to go up a lot faster. Again, I don't know if that translates into a into a series of huge trades that you can make, though.
Well, I mean, the first thing is there's no companies left that have hedged. They've all unhedged, de-hedged, and, you know, they've had to. Look, Barrick had half their stuff hedged, but the government was allowing them to do accounting that said that they didn't. And then I remember that they did a stock offering that said, we're covering our hedges, and it turned out they didn't. They covered a part of them, or they only covered one category of them. And still to this day, they have some of those hedges, I believe, and they still say that they're unhedged. So, I mean, who knows? With the accounting, who even believes this stuff anyway? But for the most part, all these guys have de-hedged completely, as they should have.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's an issue at all.
Well, those are very good points. I want to pick your brain a little bit about something that I've been pondering here for a couple of weeks, and it's this decoupling of physical and paper. You mentioned it briefly, at what point does the spread of physical versus paper have to reach before these miners go back to their refiners? And that's one of the, I guess, effects of that decoupling. This whole thing with MF Global is good. And the ripple effects of that are going to continue to be felt all through 2012. And yeah. I mean, I just wrote today about the volume on the silver COMEX yesterday was under 28,000 contracts. And back in April, when we were really cooking, they had days that they almost did 200,000 contracts. So you've got margins, being, so many more times high than they were back in April, obviously, with all the different, we had six margin hikes since then. But my theory is, why would someone that has been believing in this system and thought that you had gold or silver and you owned it and it was in your name sitting in a nice vault somewhere, and now all of a sudden you realize that your futures firm can come in and just rehypothecate it four times.
Yeah.
What I'm getting at is I suspect that we may never see participants come back to the paper silver market in sufficient enough numbers to really drive price up.
Well, this is what I say this about, not just about the futures market, about the stock market, about everything. Because, look, it came out yesterday that 33 of the last 34 weeks there's been retail equities pulled out of stock market,
right.
$130 billion. So everyone always says, well, the market reaction was this. There's no market reaction.
Yeah.
The retail investor was destroyed in 2000 in the tech wreck.
Right.
They lost all their stock money. They'd be destitute now if it weren't for the Fed blowing up the real estate bubble, giving them a housing ATM so they can have a little money. They boosted the stock market by lowering interest rates to nothing. So at least their retirement, mutual fund 401ks went up and everything. But now that's all gone. Not only is the real estate done, but the stock market had several violent crashes. People are pulling out their market. There's no such thing as market reaction. The hedge fund, how many thousands of hedge funds have been destroyed in the last few years by the volatility? And as we know, hedge funds are not hedge funds. 90% of them are just long.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I worked for one. We owned about 40 stocks. It was like owning the S&P or the Russell 2000 of garbage stocks. So, okay. So that's the stock market. In the futures market, I mean, to believe that there's really this group of diehard traders that continue to go long gold and silver futures when every single technical breakout is met by destruction. Look, yesterday morning, we had 1640 in gold.
Yep.
What has happened since then? Nothing. The Dow is the exact same price. Gold has fallen $40. Why? Because they do what they do every time.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's a technical breakout, they attack. These people have lost so much money. And then think, you talk about the six margin increase. I mean, how much money did these, quote, future traders on the COMEX lose in May alone, let alone what just happened in the past 2 weeks or what happened in September?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable that people think that there's this group of people that are still there. And look, you talk about the volumes going down. I've been doing charts of the silver price versus open interest, and so I just published it last week, and gold price versus gold open interest on the COMEX, going back for 10, 20 years, and it's at like an all-time low and plummeting, because, in the past, people would buy futures when it goes up. Now they don't. Now they just get out and go somewhere else, And it's the same kind of thing across the board. MF Global, I mean, are you kidding? On top of losing money on every single time you go long gold and silver, now they can actually just steal your money out of your account.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a watershed event in this market, and that's a big reason why they've probably have been attacking so hard now to make you think it's not. But irrespective, these traders are gone, and they're never coming back.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, I guess we can always count on some algo, some HFT money that might try to jump on a trend, a technical trend to break out and try to go long. But I don't know how we're ever going to get back to the open interest levels and the volume levels that we saw, you know, a year ago this time through May, particularly in silver, which is such a small market anyway. And when
when
the leverage has been the playing field of leverage has been so tilted away from silver into other, you know, why would I put why would I take $1 million or whatever it is in my account and have enough to cover the margin to buy silver when that will buy me four times the amount of gold or whatever the number is? You know, it just doesn't make, you don't get the bang for your buck, and so that's driven people away too. I don't know under what circumstances they'd ever come back in numbers sufficient that would create more buyers than sellers, and off to the races we go.
Look, the credit industry, it's not a surprise. It started right after we went off the gold standard 40 years ago. That's when it got started, and it picked up steam after the Glass-Steagall Act, when the bankers had carte blanche to go 40 to 1 or 81, do whatever the hell they want. And then, you know, the government puts out the, the down payment, the American Dream Down Payment Act. So they encouraged all the mortgage lenders to give everyone more loans, and the credit card companies went berserk. And even when they're bankrupt, they're still calling you every day trying to give you a credit card. I mean, look, it's the most massive credit experiment of all time. It's going to massively flame out because look what's happening. People are going bankrupt. Countries are going bankrupt. Cities are going bankrupt. And eventually, the whole concept of futures, derivatives, and even plain old stock options is going to go away. Because let's face it, even the simplest stock option is just a game created, or naked shorting for that matter, by brokerages to make money.
Yep.
And the fact is they've taken that blood from the stone. Everyone's lost money in it. There's nothing left, and we're going to go back to cash and carry markets, stocks, bonds, gold, you name it.
Yeah. Do you have any hope for the CFTC and
No.
Just leave it at that. No sense.
Yeah, they're the government. They're the enemy.
Yeah.
That would be like, do you have hope of Goldman Sachs or J.P. Morgan apologizing, or John Corzine giving back the money? No,
yeah.
Of course not.
That's what I would.
They're the problem.
I mean,
yeah.
if the government financial complex is not going to go shoot itself in the foot,
that's right.
It doesn't make any sense to think that they would.
To think that, you know, people like Ted Butler, who, you know, writes great commentary, but he's, oh, Gary Gensler's a good guy. I mean, to believe that all of this tar that's been created, and gold is just a small part of it, is going to end because the government's just going to say, you know what, we were wrong, we'll take ourselves down. Are you kidding me? They're going to go out kicking and screaming, manipulating, printing money, decrees, military martial law, you name it, until finally they're overrun. That's how human nature is.
Yeah.
That's what politicians do.
Well, and with money leaving the system, you know, we will finally reach a point where people realize that Andy McGuire was telling the truth, and everybody's gold has been sold and resold and leased and released tens of times over, and the only physical that you really own is that which you can hold in your own two hands. And as that metal and that activity leaves the system, you're left with just this fake. I mean, the COMEX is nothing. I mean, the whole COMEX LBMA system is just a shell. It's imaginary. I mean, there's nothing to it. I mean, it seems like
that's right. That's the direction we're going. It's only a matter of when. Look, I was very skeptical of Andrew McGuire because I believed he was, you know, I think he was one of these guys who was just, he piggybacked, you know, he was in the middle of all of it. He knew about, even had guys telling him it. So he said, why not? I'll do it also. I'll piggyback on them. Until he, you know, finally it really pissed him off enough. He had a conscience and he went out and spoke out against these people. And I met the guy and spent a couple of days with him at the GATA conference. I wrote a long article about it. The guy's for real. What he's talking about is for real. And it's going to end soon in one way, shape, or form. Will it be a black swan that ends it?
Yeah.
Will it be one day, or will you just have the open interest get so low that people laugh at
yeah.
it? Will it be the Pan-Asian Gold Exchange when they have their new gold contracts early next year? Will they dominate the COMEX and people just go over there? And it could be one of many things, but it will happen.
It's funny. That was my next question. I couldn't know I was going to ask you. I've been fortunate to be put in contact with some of the folks that are setting that exchange up and some other people around the world that are, you know, kind of wired into what they're doing over there. And I know they've run into some delays dealing with the government and, you know, it's just a different society trying to get something built and opened over there that is really any place else in the world. Are you optimistic, though? I mean, I'm not optimistic about it opening because that's going to happen. Unfortunately, a little later than we'd hope. But are you optimistic that that could be, at least be a piece of the, you know, that could be the type of thing that finally moves us toward a rational, true paper and physical price of?
Well, metal? Look, you know, a lot of smart people that I have confidence in believe so. And certainly the structure of it, having a futures exchange where everything is actually backed by physical gold, and initially you'll have 300 million customers of the China Agricultural Bank all eligible to buy
yeah.
those 10-ounce contracts. It certainly has the ability to do that. But will it? I don't know. You know, I always call it this kind of, I said the magic unicorn event, like, oh my God, you wake up and gold's up $200 and the cartel is in retreat. It almost seems like it can't happen, but of course it will. No one thought that the London gold pool would break when it sat at $35 forever, and then voila, it broke, and a couple years later we were at $900
yeah.
an ounce,
yeah.
a 30x increase. So it could be the Pan Gold Exchange. For all you know, Greece will finally blow, and you know, they will call it a credit event, and that'll do it. Or maybe we'll bomb Iran or something. I mean, who freaking
yeah,
knows
yeah.
if that will do it? But I guarantee you that Pan Gold Exchange is a serious, serious, you know, cog in the mix.
Yeah, well, and it couldn't come at a better time in this decoupling, you know, with MF Global and everything else that's going on between paper and physical. Because again, there becomes kind of a global physical arbitrage that could happen. You know, if you can buy a COMEX contract and somehow take delivery, actually be able to take delivery of it and get in your own two hands and then sell it over there in Kunming City for a different price that's considerably higher than what you just paid, that's going to really, I would think, have an opportunity to accelerate the demise of the current system. Well, we'll see. Let's hope.
Yep, we'll see is the best answer.
Yeah, anything could happen, that's for sure. Andy, I want to be respectful of your time, I know all the listeners appreciate you spending some time and talking. As we head into 2012, I asked your buddy Mike Krieger this when we visited a couple of weeks ago. I fear this is just going to be a crazy year, not from a Mayan apocalyptic standpoint, but events are moving so rapidly now. And the game has been taken to such an exponential level that it's just not going to take much for everything to unwind pretty quickly. As we roll into 2012, what do you think is going to happen to gold or anything like that? What worries you the most? I mean, is there anything you wake up in the middle of the night and you go, oh, crap, boy, I tell you what. I mean, is there anything that makes you nervous?
Put it this way. I was... In 2002, when I went into the sector, I was 100% mining shares. And starting in 2008, I started to buy bullion. And about 6 months ago, I guess it was, is when I went 100% bullion. Okay, so no more stocks. And since that time, I have not lost one second of sleep.
There you go.
I can't tell you how much better. So you say, what worries me about gold itself? Zero, nothing.
Yeah.
There's not
no.
one thing that worries me. If I had the gold on leverage and I had to, you know, sell some of it to pay back, well, that'd be one thing. But if you own gold and silver, free and unencumbered, and then there's nothing to worry about. Now, what do I worry about in the future? Well, I worry about the world.
Yeah.
I worry that there will be let's say Europe collapses. Oh, great, gold will go up in value. Yeah, but it'll be a really crappy world. It'll probably mean hyperinflation at the least in Europe, in a lot of parts of Europe, and that'll certainly spread quickly. You'll have the, you know, probably have a run on paper assets everywhere, which will cause some of the things we worry about, like maybe food shortages, social unrest, totalitarian government, all kinds of crazy decrees, financial or martial law. I mean, these are the things that I worry about, and that's why I write at the end of every one of my piece, protect yourself. And I talk about not just gold, physical gold and silver, but food and, you know, security and all kinds of things, just to make sure that if the worst case scenario happens, you're prepared for it.
Right.
Because who knows what will happen in 2012. I know it's not going to be a good year. They're not going to turn around things and make everyone happy. It's going to be a year of difficulty and maybe a year that's momentous in history.
And all the preparations that you could possibly make, you know, if everything, you know, just sails along smoothly and everything's fine, fine. But, you know, if there is in the 1 in a million chance that there's a societal breakdown type of event because of the financial system or war or whatever, and you had this warning and you thought this through and then you didn't prepare for it, you're going to feel like the biggest idiot on the planet.
Yeah,
well, the signs were there.
You know, look, there's a continuum of things you can do to protect yourself. You have to choose how worried you are about things. And, you know, people who listen to these kind of podcasts are people who are thinking long and hard about what might happen. But, you know, when I say, when I'm here, I'm not here to pitch gold for Miles Franklin. It's not an investment. I'm trying to convince people that they need to think about protecting themselves. And historically, there's no better way of protecting yourself, at least your financial assets, from, you know, with gold and silver, physical.
Hey, and you got to answer a question for me. I have a good friend of mine who just last week went out and bought his first physical gold and silver. Bought a whole bunch of Maples and ASEs, and then bought some Krugerrands in coins. And he calls me now. He's called me a couple of times and said, "What is it about this stuff? I just sit there and look at it and stack it and play with it." He goes, "This is awesome. What is the deal? What is it about having that physical in your possession? It's just great."
Well, I mean, that I say to everyone that you just, I mean, people cannot get over this hump. They're told the propaganda of 20 years, 40 years, that gold is just a barbarous relic. It's volatile. It's not an investment, all this stuff, and you believe it. And if you could finally get yourself to just buy one coin, particularly a gold one, because you're like, holy cow, this is $2,000, right? And you realize, man, this thing is shiny. It's heavy. You look at a little history. You go, God, look at how hard it was to produce this, how little of it there is in the world after 5,000 years, considering that everyone wants it. It changes you forever. Because you do realize eventually that it's money. It's not an investment. It's not like buying a stock. It's money. It'll protect the value of your net worth, of your assets, for as long as you live, and then for future generations.
And that's all part. That's, you just sit there and smile, you know, and it's almost like it smiles back at you. You know, it winks. It's shiny. It's pretty. It just, yeah, it's awesome. And Andy, you're awesome. Thank you. It's been a pleasure to get a chance to visit with you. Tell, if you could, as we wrap up, you put out your Ranty Andy columns daily or most every day? I mean,
every day. In fact, we put out two every day. Miles Franklin was started by a guy named David Sheckman over 20 years ago. He still writes a blog every day, and I write my rant every afternoon. So you get one in the morning, one in the afternoon. Go to milesfranklin.com, right in the top right, there's a box. Put your email, it's free, and we'll send it to you.
And it's good stuff, and I mean, it's lengthy. I mean, this is not like something, well, like me, that you just cobble together in 45 minutes or an hour. You're obviously taking a lot of time with this every day.
I spent 6 hours on it this morning alone, and that's my fourth one this week.
And it's full of links and news articles and your commentary and charts. And frankly, I mean, if you're following this market and you want to, you know, for whatever reason, it's become required reading for me. I think you do a great job. So thank you for all you do.
And thank you.
And thank you for being a part of the TFMR podcast. And hopefully as we turn the corner into 2012, we'll do it again sometime.
Excellent. Have a happy new year.
You too, Andy. Thanks again.